Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Officials from both Koreas are meeting at the demilitarized zone to prepare for a planned summit between their leaders next month. South Korean Unification Minister Cho Myung-yeon said the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula remains the most important part of the agenda. The meeting comes 2 days after a surprise three-day unofficial visit to Beijing by North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un, who committed his regime to the denuclearization of the peninsula in talks with China's President Xi Jinping. President Donald Trump Wednesday tweeted, "There is a good chance Mr. Kim will do what's right for his people and for humanity." His spokesperson is Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
"We're going to be cautiously optimistic, but we feel like things are moving in the right direction and that the meeting yesterday was a good indication that the maximum pressure campaign has been working. And we're going to continue moving forward in this process in hopes for a meeting down the road."
Sanders said the White House wants to make sure a meeting between the president and Mr. Kim can be done as soon as possible while making sure it's done properly. President Trump said his Chinese counterpart sent him a message saying his meeting with Mr. Kim went well. In Ghana, thousands protested against the expansion of defense ties with the United States. Protesters, like minority parliament spokesman Alhaji Fuseni, said the deal threatens Ghana's sovereignty.
"The independence of Ghana is not for any sale.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I can tell them that the good people of this country, overwhelming majority of people of this country, flatly and totally reject this attempt to send us back into colonialism."
The agreement provides training and equipment to the Canadian military and allows deployment of U.S. troops. The move comes as the U.S. and other countries battle jihadism in Africa. This is VOA News. U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley Wednesday told the Security Council other countries need to step up and pay a bigger share of the multi-billion-dollar bill for peacekeeping operations.
"The United States has long been the largest financial contributor to UN peacekeeping by far. That will not change. But peacekeeping is a shared responsibility. With shared responsibility comes shared burdens and shared costs. One country should not shoulder more than one quarter of the UN peacekeeping budget."
This year, the U.S. said it's paying about 29% of the $7 billion peacekeeping budget after cutting about $600 million from last year's contribution. U.S. defense officials said one of the militants killed in a U.S. airstrike in Libya March 24 on the outskirts of Ubari was a high-ranking al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb official. Saturday's strike killed two militants as part of efforts to deny them a safe haven in the country's vast desert region. Polls are now closed, vote counting underway in Egypt following a presidential election spread out over 3 days. Polling station official Mahmoud Ramadan Ibrahim said he saw a bigger turnout than the past 2 days on Wednesday because a number of voters waited to the last moment. He said turnout was about 40% at his station in Cairo. Turnout is key in a ballot widely seen as confirming a second term for President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, who faced only token opposition. Thousands took part in a silent march in Paris Wednesday in memory of an 85-year-old Jewish woman stabbed to death last week in an attack believed to have been motivated by anti-Semitism. Thousands of Jews, Muslims, and other politicians across the spectrum joined the march from the Place de la Nation to Morel Kroll's apartment. Among those taking part was Robert Ains.
"It started as a memorial in honor of Mrs. Noel, who was killed. Once we've known that it was an anti-Semitic motive, then it became a march against anti-Semitism because she is the 11th person being killed for the only reason that she was Jewish."
Noel had escaped the mass deportation of Jews from France during World War II. Ecuador has blocked a communications link of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who's been holed up at the Ecuadorian embassy in London since 2012, trying to avoid extradition to Sweden and the U.S. and possible arrest in Britain. Assange is said to have used social media to speak out on controversial political subjects, despite a warning from Quito not to do so. The U.S. Wednesday said it revised its fourth-quarter economic growth in 2017 up to 2.9%, but still lower than the 3.2% expansion in the third quarter. Meanwhile, Wall Street suffered further losses in Wednesday trading as technology shares took a dive, the benchmark Dow Jones slipping 9 points to 23,848. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 29th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. The Tanzanian government jails top leaders of the country's main opposition party after charging them with sedition.
I absolutely disagree with this arrest. This arrest is pretty much political, and I hope my government will look this another picture, because the more they arrest opposition, the more they anger the people.
Liberatus Mugambi is a member of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party. A Burundian opposition leader is arrested for allegedly destabilizing national security. Cameroon's self-proclaimed secessionist movement reacts to a government's gesture for dialogue. And late reports say the Kenyan government has deported lawyer Miguna Miguna for the second time.
People who were on the Emirates flight to Dubai were reporting that he was, in fact, on that flight, and he was unconscious, which means that he had been sedated because he was literally carried into the plane.
Lilian Asimbue is a human rights lawyer and personal assistant to Miguna Miguna. Ugandan authorities suspend over 20 radio stations over alleged failure to respect minimum broadcasting standards. And South Sudan's government shuts down a mobile phone network affecting tens of thousands of users. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The top six leaders of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party, including the chairman, Freeman Mbowe, have been detained and charged with sedition, rioting, and having unlawful assembly. A judge will decide today, Thursday, whether they should be granted bail. The authorities said the opposition leaders violated a government proclamation prohibiting political assembly across the country when they held such meeting on February 16, 2018. But Chadema member Liberatus Mugambi says the arrests are politically motivated.
Currently in my country, we don't have all these freedoms. These freedoms have been taken away. We as opposition, if we're not asking, we have to demand, because it's our rights. It's in our constitution, Tanzania constitution. It's under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So all these orders which have been given by the government are illegal and are against basic fundamental human rights.
The government is accusing Mr. Mbowe and the others of breaching peace and then terrifying the public, which led to the death of the National Institute of Transport student. And for that, the prosecution asked the judge to deny bail to Mr. Mbowe and the others.
Yes, I'm still surprised. The people who are being oppressed are arrested, and the oppressor are just doing their normal activities. Mbowe did not have a gun. Salim Mwalimu did not have a gun. Peter Msigwa did not have a gun. Any opposition leader did not have a gun. And everybody is being surprised how in the world the people who don't have weapons have been arrested for killing Aquilina. Aquilina was in a bus. And it's not even normal for a civilian in Tanzania to hold a gun in the public. So I'm so surprised. There's no any forensic evidence or no any investigation. Thorough investigation has been done to arrest this opposition. So to my opinion, the government is so worried with the opposition, so they do much they can to subordinate, to oppress the opposition, so we're not going to be doing the political activities. So this is just a plan deal, and this is illegal, and this is not even practical to any democratic country.
The prosecution said that your leader, Mr. Freeman Mbowe, made some statements that were seditious and had the intention to bring hatred and contempt to the citizens of Tanzania.
I disagree. Hatred is not involved whatsoever. It's just the fact that the opposition, Mr. Freeman Mbowe, Salim Mwalimu, Peter Msigwa, Vincent Baschinji, all these opposition leaders are trying to practice their basic rights, their right to assemble, their right to speech, their right to do anything which is under Declaration of Fundamental Human Rights. So I absolutely disagree with this arrest. This arrest is pretty much political, and I hope my government will look this another picture, because the more they arrest opposition, the more they anger the people. And this keeps metastasizing to everybody over the country. At the end of the day, this is just a time bomb. I challenge and ask the government to be a little bit fair, to let people plug their rights to assemble, their right to speech, their right to opinion, all those things. So this being said, I absolutely disagree with this arrest. This arrest is pretty much political and it won't take our country anywhere.
So Mr. Mboye and the others are due to appear in court again on Thursday. They were denied bail. What do you expect should happen?
In my government, I expect anything. And I don't expect anything less to Freeman Mboye. I don't expect anything less to Salim Mwalimu, Vincent Mashinji, and so forth. Because we don't have freedom. We don't have right to say anything in my country at this moment.
Liberatus Mwangombe is a member of Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party. He was speaking with me from the U.S. state of Maryland. An opposition leader in Burundi has been arrested by the country's intelligence service for allegedly destabilizing national security. As Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura, the government says it has launched an investigation into the matter.
Alois Marichako, chairman of an opposition political party, National Gathering for Change, was arrested by the Burundi intelligence services in the country's second capital, Gitega. Burundi police spokesman Pierre Nkurikiye said that his arrest was not politically motivated.
He's not arrested because of being an opposition political leader, but he has been arrested yesterday because of being involved in making troubles to the internal security of our country. No details now, because the investigation is going on. If we give more details, they can disturb the police investigation.
According to the spokesman of the National Gathering for Change party, Nikiza George, said that the chairman was arrested while attending the funeral of his grandmother. He said it is the first time their party member is arrested.
The president of RANAC has been arrested by intelligence services. We do not know the reason for his arrestation. We have tried to ask the authority in charge of security the reason of his detention, but till now we do not know what is going on.
This is not the first time arrests of opposition members have been reported in the country. Agathon Rwasa, an opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the Burundi parliament, said that hundreds of his supporters have been arrested by the Burundian authorities since 2015.
To see the day of the day is a little bit frightened by the opposition. And they want to suppress anybody so that they can be sure they get 100% of the yes vote in the referendum. So it is an intimidation campaign they are orchestrating, aimed at weakening the opposition so that it can be guaranteed of an unconditional yes in the referendum.
Burundi is set to conduct a referendum on May 17th this year, for the first time in 13 years since it was last amended in 2005. The amendment of the country's constitution will see the presidential term limits scrapped, which critics say that the move will enable the incumbent president to contest in the 2020 general elections. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Thursday, March 29th. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. Late reports say the Kenyan government has deported lawyer Miguna Miguna for the second time. Miguna had been held at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport since his return on Monday from a six-week exile in Canada. On Wednesday, a judge convicted the country's interior minister and inspector general of police, as well as the former director of immigration, for defying consecutive court summons to release Miguna and gave him back his Kenyan passport. This is a developing story, and the Kenyan government was not immediately available to respond. Lillian Asimbwe is a human rights lawyer and personal assistant to Miguna Miguna. She says Miguna was forced onto a Dubai-bound Emirates flight, sedated and unconscious.
So basically, what happened yesterday, there was an order that was given by the judge ordering the police and the immigration officers to release Miguna unconditionally and to make sure that they produce him in court in the morning at 9 a.m. Of course, that did not happen. They continue to detain him. As a result, the judge was presiding over the case, asked the Interior Secretary, Fred Matiang'i, to come to court with Miguna and to also make sure that the Inspector General of Police will be present in court, as well as the head of immigration. Now, at 2:30 p.m., around that time, they did not show up. And, of course, they were found in contempt of the order that was given earlier today. And so the judge found them in contempt and said he is, they are now criminals, that's for sure, and he is going to sentence them tomorrow morning. As we were still waiting to hear the kind of sentence they are going to be given, we basically just had a quick sort of a rush at the airport where his lawyers were basically assaulted and chased away. And during that time, there was an alert that they had Miguna shouting and was calling for help. And after that, there was silence. There was nothing else. And the next thing we knew was that people were reporting who were on the flight, the Emirates flight to Dubai, were reporting that he was, in fact, on that flight. And he was unconscious, which means that he had been sedated because he was literally carried into the plane. We have spoken with the Canadian authorities in Dubai to follow up on the situation, and we have no idea where the final destination is at this point.
Lillian, what do you think the lawyers might do next?
There will be a crisis, obviously, and I, at this point, I feel very bad in terms of the situation and just being a jurist in Kenya, whether you are a lawyer or you are a judge, in a country where there is no respect for the rule of law, there's no respect for court orders, which means that the executive is just ruling on its own. The judiciary is basically being almost violated in a way that it can't be effective. So it is a very big legal crisis, but it's also a very sad day for democracy. It's a very sad day for the rule of law. It's a very sad day for the justice across the world, because I really do believe that Kenya has now become one of the rogue states in the region.
Why do you think the Kenyan government cannot meet a simple legal requirement, the order of the judge to at least reissue Miguna's passport?
The government is very much able to do that, but they are basically using Miguna to show that they are an authoritarian regime. Now, we know that this is directly linked to NRM. NRM, which Miguna heads, and because of that, and the quest and the objective for NRM, which is electoral justice for the people who have been killed during the period of elections, and, you know, the social justice issues as well, which Miguna is pursuing very intensely, they don't want that. So they don't want him in the country to ensure that he does not pursue those goals and those issues. He does not raise those issues.
Lillian Asimbwe is a human rights lawyer and personal assistant to Kenyan lawyer Miguna Miguna. She was speaking with me from Toronto, Canada. In a text message sent this morning, Miguna said he woke up in Dubai sick and in need of medical treatment. An official of Cameroon's self-proclaimed Abazonian secessionist movement says the group will not dialogue with the government until its leaders and other members are released. This comes after Cameroon's new interior minister, Paul Atanga Nji, said this week that the government of President Paul Biya is willing to dialogue to end the crisis in the country's English-speaking regions. But Atanga said any such dialogue will be conditioned on a united Cameroon. Chris Anu, the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed separatist movement, says independence of the Anglophone regions is non-negotiable.
Let me let you know that this is the same minister who had said a few months before his appointment that there is no Anglophone problem in Cameroon. And so it is surprising to hear from the same mouth some talks about holding dialogue. We don't believe it, not for a moment.
Many countries are calling for the dialogue. The government wants to have the dialogue with people who are willing to advance the unity of the country and not with people who he say are burning or looting or raping or destroying property. This is a veiled reference to your organization.
Of course, from the description, you can tell that the dialogue they are talking about is not the inclusive dialogue that we have heard every single international organization or government talked about. The kind of dialogue they are talking about is not a dialogue that involves us. If they want to hold genuine dialogue, they should start first by releasing our leaders, all of them. There are close to 1,000 Southern Cameroonians who are behind bars, arrested because of this crisis, including President Seseko Julius Ayuktabe. They want dialogue. That is where they should start. Now, the only other condition we would give for dialogue would be we will only sit on table with them to talk dialogue that leads to the severance of ties between the two countries. I'm here referring to the Federal Republic of Ambazonia and French Cameroon.
So are you saying, Chris, that if the government releases your leaders that are in detention, you will be willing to talk with the government?
If they release our leaders from detention, we will be ready to talk to the government on the terms that the talks or the dialogue would lead to the final division of the two countries as it was before independence or before the two countries came to live together. Let my left hand be cut off if we will accept any dialogue that does not end with an independent Republic of Ambazonia.
What about the humanitarian situation that the crisis between you and the government is creating in the Anglophone region?
Sir, you know that we didn't ask for this trouble. La République du Cameroun, their president, Paul Biya, declared war on us. We did not declare war. We did not declare violence. They released their soldiers. They descended upon our homes and our villages. They burned some villages. They burned some towns. When soldiers come burning towns and villages, where do you expect the people to go? Of course, you expect a humanitarian problem because the people are bound to run away. The regime in Cameroon, sir, created a humanitarian problem. Ambazonians are not the ones who have created a humanitarian problem in Cameroon. So it is not our responsibility to try to look for solutions to the humanitarian problem. It is the regime in Cameroon and the international community, the United Nations Commission for Refugees. That is their domain.
Chris, we do thank you very much again for talking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, sir. My pleasure.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Authorities in Uganda have suspended over 20 radio stations over what they say is a failure to respect minimal broadcasting standards. Pamela Akunda, spokesperson for Uganda Communications Commission, says the affected radio stations were promoting witchcraft in the country. But Robert Sempela, coordinator of the Uganda Human Rights Network for Journalists Uganda, a media watchdog, calls this a crackdown on media freedoms in Uganda. Reporter Mugumi Davis Rakarinch has more from Kampala.
The Uganda Communications Commission, or UCC, issued a directive this Tuesday for 23 radio stations to stop broadcasting of what they say is promotion of bad tendencies and crimes in the country. Ankunda says, as a media regulator, they cannot watch on as radio stations promote evil in the society.
We also found out that some of these media houses were aiding and abetting electronic fraud. They were hosting conmen of people who say they can multiply wealth to understating Ugandans.
She also says UCC gave out several warnings to these radio stations to stop those bad practices, but the stations simply ignored.
We don't just wake up one day and say we're going to revoke or suspend someone's license. We first engage them. Besides, every individual that gets the radio station gets the license conditions, you know, attached to it, and they get a set of the broadcasting standards. So this is not news to them. The do's and don'ts of broadcasting are not news to them.
Robert Sempala, the coordinator for Human Rights Network for Journalists Uganda, however, says UCC is being used by politicians to suppress media rights.
Media is so far under attack with so many folks, both by the politicians and this body that's supposed to regulate the media. And they have declined to even have discussions with the stakeholders. The decisions are taken singularly by UCC. They have a very negative implication on the media, and that's danger and doom for critical free and independent media in the country.
It is not the first time the government has closed down or suspended operation of media houses in the country this year. In January, Uganda's English tabloid, The Red Paper's office, was raided by the police and its editors detained over a month for what the government said was a negative propaganda. The government has over the years suspended or threatened to suspend media houses that have given the opposition airtime, claiming it is inciting violence.
There is a deliberate process of trying to sabotage media houses economically through such closures, through interference with the sources of the revenue of such media houses.
Siempala says the suspension is illegal and that his office is working with some of the affected media houses to the Uganda Communications Commission in courts of law. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The South Sudan government has shut down the phone network operator VivaCell, affecting tens of thousands of mobile users. Information Minister Michael McQuay said the company failed to pay license fees totaling more than $60 million. Mayang David Mayar reports from Yuba.
We want them to pay a sum of $66 million for their license. And up to now, they are dragging their feet, they are not paying, and they are continuing to operate.
Government spokesman Michael McQuay says that's why the government shut down VivaCell, which forced tens of thousands of network subscribers to rush out and buy SIM cards from other mobile phone carriers. Business owners say they have lost thousands, if not millions, of South Sudanese pounds in unsold airtime. McQuay, who is also a VivaCell subscriber, acknowledges that the government exempted VivaCell from paying taxes for the past 10 years and the company did not have to pay for an operating license. But he says the government now wants VivaCell to operate under the policies of the government and pay for an operating license. VivaCell has been operating in South Sudan since 2008. The government says that $66 million is for the operational fees only. It does not include annual fees. The network was shut down at midnight. Throughout the day, long queues formed in the offices of other mobile phone network operators can be seen across Juba as hundreds of people rush to buy a new subscriber identification module or SIM cards. Eva Vanustos is one of them. In speaking in Arabic, Vanustos says the sudden shutdown of VivaCell cut her off from friends and relatives, including those living overseas.
I used to call my elder brother who in America, and now we have been disconnected with him, and now I have also lost all contact. It will be unless I find my friends or my sister or any other relatives, then I will take their contacts so that we can contact each other.
Aside from hampering communication among friends and family members, the decision to shut down VivaCell has affected many business operations too. Businessmen and women who have been selling VivaCell airtime say they have lost thousands, if not millions, of South Sudanese pounds to the shutdown. Lualdeng Arok, a supervisor at Edoma, which distributes VivaCell airtime and SIM cards in Juba, says the shutdown has hurt his company.
We have our money there, something like $1 million or $700,000. We don't know what to do. It is the VivaCell who may explain more to us as a dealers. That's why we are complaining, and we like them, VivaCell and the government, so that they can sit down and iron out what is the problem. Either there is a difference with the agreement, then they renew it.
VivaCell informed its subscribers and distributors in a published note that the company is working with national authorities to resolve the matter and says it hopes it can be back in business soon in South Sudan. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
And that's it for this Thursday, March 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butt in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we continue our discussion about presidential transitions on the continent. We'll take a closer look at Sierra Leone, where a troubled runoff is underway. Sierra Leone's Supreme Court approved the Election Commission's request to delay the runoff presidential vote after the lifting of an interim injunction that had stalled preparations.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.